know if 62 degrees is good swimming weather, Wendy. I know Ryan likes to, as soon as the broadcast is over, Ryan likes to head over to Lake Michigan and just wade in the water for a while, but not that thing's too cold.
I've already got my cap on.
Do you want to put that on?
Yeah, you got to snap it. That's the key, is to snap it.
Right.
And your flapper swimsuit,
too? The nose plug, yeah. No, this is, I have to tell you, because I'm sure there are a lot of parents right now that are driving all those high schoolers that get off school. They like to jump on the train,
sure,
head downtown, and I know because I'm on the train ride with all of them on the way back to Lake Zurich or Palatine or Barrington or wherever they're going,
mm-hmm,
and they go and hang out at the beach all day.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
What's wrong with that?
That's nothing wrong, but it's 62 degrees.
Too cold.
Yeah, but you don't have to go in the water. You can just lay out.
That's true.
You can just hang out.
Yeah.
With
half
your fidget
the time
spinners.
I go to the... You could. Sure, you could do that. Half the time I go to the beach by me in Evanston, more than half, I don't think I go in the water at all. I lay there and I read. And it's very enjoyable.
So your sandcastle building skills are phenomenal.
I'll sometimes do a sandcastle, sometimes.
I have difficulty reading in the bright sunlight.
Do you?
I really do, even with sunglasses. So is there a shady spot? I guess that's stupid to go to the beach.
Well, Ryan's kind enough. He'll come with me and he'll just provide shade. He'll just like use his hand as a shield for me.
Yep.
That's the nicest thing in the world.
That's what
God,
we do.
I remember being in high school and we used to take the train from Brookfield and Riverside. I met friends there, and we would hop off at Union Station, and I believe it was the 151 bus that would take you to Oak Street.
Right to the beach.
Yeah.
Nice, nice.
Boy, those were the good old days.
Our move was usually my friends and I would go starting this time of year, first week in June, as soon as like the day after school was done.
Yeah.
We would go to the Warren Dunes in Michigan. It was about an hour and 12 minutes, hour and 15 minutes, and it what a day that was.
Did they have a tire swing?
No, there was no...
You know, that you could swing out and jump?
There was no tire swing. I'm not sure why we chose that instead of downtown Chicago's beaches. Maybe because the parking was a lot easier.
You know what? I would rather drive an hour out of my way to have good parking.
Yeah.
But now there are all these fun distractions downtown. You know, they're walking back from Union Station and Ogilvy, and they see the Nutella store.
Yeah.
And then you go line up. Hey, there's a line. Let's stand in it.
Right.
Guys, go to Walgreens and buy a little jar of Nutella.
It's not
and
the same.
I don't even like Nutella. Am
Wendy,
I the only one?
Bite
that
your
line,
tongue.
Every day that line wraps around that block.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, a one-day thing. Okay, whatever. But no, still today.
And is it just, it's the novelty aspect mostly, right, Ryan? Because they do sell Nutella almost everywhere.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, if you're going there for the menu items, I mean, it is cool to see the cooks in there, but they're cooking with Nutella.
They're making regular standard fare. They're making hamburgers and hot dogs, but there's Nutella involved.
No, I mean, it's crepes. It's a lot of sweet things.
Oh.
But
all right.
I guess if there's a line, you jump in it, right?
Yeah.
Is anybody going to take a historic ride on one of the CTA trains today? This is exciting to me.
What's going on
I'm
today?
I'm kind of a train geek.
It's pretty cool.
It's today's the 125th anniversary of the CTA, and I believe...
Some of the equipment is
there's a 1923 car that they're running out there for free. You can take it for free, and a 1976 car that you can run out there for
free. And do you have to talk about things of that era? Like, do you have to get on and go, I think Woodrow Wilson's good for the country.
This depression is turning around. It's going to turn around real quick.
I'm a bit of a train geek.
Well, this is cool because the L actually came in 1892, just before the Columbian Exposition, right?
Oh,
the year that followed. I'm actually reading The Devil in the White City right now, and I love that story.
Isn't it great?
It is. It's fantastic.
You know they're making it into a movie.
They should.
They are.
I haven't read it yet. I bought it at a garage sale, and it's still sitting on my nightstand.
It's so good.
Every page, I want to run down to Jackson Park and just take a look. I just want to walk around and be like, wow.
It's so funny you say that because they mention, I'm trying to remember if they mentioned in the book or if I read this somewhere else, but there's only a couple things still standing from that era, and I have visited a couple of them. One of them is a bar that I think is called Burnham's that they've named after Daniel Burnham. That's in a hotel. I'm trying to remember what the exact streets are. Anyway, it's just cool. There's only a couple of things still standing from that period, but wow, the history. And the book does such a great job. I know I'm talking about a book that I think most people have already read. I know you have it and you're going to read it, but it tells two parallel stories of the formation of the city And then, you know, the ugly story of
the serial killer. Yeah. H.H. Holmes.
It's really a nice blend of stories.
It's fun, though, right now reading it, because you realize everything that's going on now with the ideas and the planning around Obama's Presidential Library and Museum in that exact location. You think of all of the things that they were going through at that time with the kind of land they were dealing with and what they were trying to do under such pressure and tight, you know, budgets and staffing and unions and everything like that. Now you think about, you know, Obama wants to put his stuff in there. So it's interesting.
And keep in mind, Wendy, these were the days when Chicago was corrupt.
Well, you didn't even get through that. The CTA opened on June 6th, 1892. As Ryan mentioned, the L is considered one of Chicago's most iconic symbols. And as Ryan also mentioned, the agency's heritage fleet, which were built in 1923 and 1976, will run on Loop L tracks between noon and 3:15 today.
Oh, wow, that's pretty cool. That's very cool. Wow. All right, let's do this. We must take a break, and then there's something scholastic that you wanted to bring up that I think is really this is fascinating. All this and more. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Bill. Something I would like to warn the young youths of today: the internet can come back and bite you in the.
Go on. Say it. Yeah. That's true.
There, I'll clean it up.
Yep.
The Harvard class of 2021 will contain at least 10 fewer students after the university rescinded offers to students who reportedly shared offensive memes. Will get you in trouble. The memes, which the Harvard Crimson characterized as sexually explicit and, quote, messages that sometimes targeted minority groups, were predominantly sent as private messages in this little chat thread born from a Facebook group called Harvard Memes for Horny Bourgeois Teens. First of all, don't join that chat group.
Right. It sounds slightly dangerous.
The meme group was an offshoot of the official Harvard 2021 Facebook group, which the university runs.
Oh, they do. All right.
Harvard disclaims authority over any unofficial groups that might pop up as a result of this.
Yeah.
Well, there were 10 people that had posted these bad memes, and lo and behold, they got a letter in the mail that said, you know how we said you were accepted to Harvard? We're rescinding that admission.
You can't come to Harvard anymore.
I say good for Harvard.
It doesn't say specifically what these memes contained, right? It just that they were offensive.
Well, that they involve sexually explicit things and minority things.
For some reason, and I don't know this, I'm just guessing. Of the 10, my guess is that a couple of these will sue the school saying, you've already accepted us, and what we do on our own time is our time. Don't you think?
I don't think so.
No?
Because, I mean, I know in work contracts and stuff, if you misrepresent your company, the contract is null and void. I'm sure you have to act appropriately in order to be a Harvard student. To gain admission into this private X-rated meme group, which again, please... Students were asked to post an offensive meme in the public group of about 100 admitted students.
Oh, so they said point blank, this is what we're looking for. We want you to post something offensive.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
This was how Harvard administrators got wind of the memes. In April, university officials sent an email asking students to hand over every offensive meme that they had contributed. And a student whose offer was rescinded, they were told to send them to the university under anonymity.
Right.
But then they found out who it was, and 10 students are not going to be there. I wonder about that lawsuit, because I don't know that they have a leg to stand on.
All right. So if you work for a company, depending on what sort of a job you have, you might sign some sort of a personal service contract. But you don't do that when you're a part of a school. There's no contract that is signed.
Yeah, but if you do something against the law or something bad and there's a news story and people find out about it, the school can drop you at any time.
Oh, I guess so.
I mean,
I just imagine, because we're talking about Harvard, correct?
Yes.
All right, so it's people who obviously have some money. If they're sending their children to Harvard, they have a little bit of cash.
Maybe they can come up with some more.
They would have to come up with some more. My guess is that there's going to be at least one kid out of this 10, and maybe more, who just says, you accepted me. You can't just rescind that. There's no way you can just pull that back on me.
I don't know that that's true. I think they can, at their discretion, can pull it out.
Can still do it?
I don't know.
They did it, because it does. It makes the school look really bad.
Yep.
So they're self-policing it, which is a good move. But wow, I'm anxious to see how this ends up.
I'll never forget, you know, junior year, Michael had this college night where all the different colleges and universities were set up in the gym. I know your girls went through it. And there's little tables. And he went to the Yale table, and he just was talking to the woman. And she goes, oh, are you interested in going to Yale? And Michael said, well, I don't know. I was in a play called Legally Blonde, and Yale was featured in that. And she just
sign here.
She just went back on her phone and didn't do
not
anything
interested at all after that.
And I said, "Excuse me, I didn't realize there was a music program there. He may be interested." Yeah. And she's like, "Oh yeah, there's stuff there."
Wow.
Like,
that
oh
was
my
fast.
God, it was Harvard or Yale. It was one of them.
Terry, my wife, on more than one occasion has done. You know, she does a lot of voiceover work, different commercials, and on more than one occasion, when they're done taping. They say, we want to do, just for fun, we want to do this crazy version where there's a lot of swearing and you make fun of the product. You know, just for fun, we'll just have a reel of it and stuff like that. And she'll never do it because she said,
I've
no, because if the client...
That.
Yeah, it's a little backwards, isn't it?
You don't want anybody to have something that you recorded on tape that you don't have control over.
But it's the, you know, it's the equivalent for us in radio. Sometimes when you're doing promos...
Chris Duffy has a file on me you wouldn't believe.
It's, yeah, we had to add more office space upstairs. Just so you know how sometimes you'll blow a line, you'll screw something up, and you know you might say something that you might not want to say. But
you're
you
the only one who doesn't swear when that happens.
I've
by
never,
the way.
I haven't. But you know how they probably keep those just for a fun Christmas party reel or something like that. Right?
How fun is
but
that?
But these guys, like the advertising guys with my wife, they want to have it because they go, oh, this will be funny. We'll do the same commercial, only there'll be a lot of swearing and you'll make fun of the product instead of endorse the product. And she always goes, yeah, you know what? I'm not comfortable with that.
I have never heard of that.
Yeah.
Granted, I've done two voiceovers in my entire life, but because I'd partake.
Well, would
you know
do
me.
It? Yeah, you would want, yeah, you'd beg them. Let's use that version instead of the original
right.
version. I like that version
that
better.
That seems very weird.
All right, so with these Harvard kids, it's left at, this is where it's left at, is that they have been, all 10 kids have been uninvited, unaccepted to Harvard.
Students were told not to attend Harvard's annual weekend for potential students as their accepted statuses were in jeopardy. Ultimately, at least 10 students lost their offers of admission.
Wow, that
a
is
Harvard
serious.
Spokesperson told... an agency that the university, quote, does not comment publicly on the admission status of individual applicants.
Interesting. Interesting.
They can pull back an offer for a lot of things. I had a neighbor who, she told me a friend's kid got this full ride scholarship to a school in her last year of high school. Her grades plummeted and they pulled back the academic offer, the scholarship, completely.
Wow. Makes sense. It does make
college
sense.
College is so expensive.
One other quick note. Are we, Kevin, I should have asked you this already, but we were working on Al Franken for either this week or next. Is that still reality?
Yeah, that's happening.
Is that this week?
Yes, week? I believe this Thursday. Week?
Well, he has some free time now that he's not going to be on Bill Maher's show.
I was just going to ask if you read that, because I read that last night.
And they're friends.
They've been friends for years, and he was scheduled to appear on this upcoming Friday episode and has pulled back. He's not going to do the episode. So we can certainly ask him that question.
Tomorrow at noon.
What went behind it? Oh, is it tomorrow at noon?
12:05.
Excellent.
Join us on the stream of consciousness.
Right.
You can find that at WGN Plus.
Right. Good. All right. So stay where you are. In a little bit, news. Ryan will give you the news. And then Jim O'Hare, Chicagoan made good. You may know him from Parks and Recreation. He has a new movie coming out. We've had him on the show before. I've known him for years. Very nice guy. So stick around for that. And a lot more. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
What a wonderful day. It's sunshiny. It's bright.
It just got brighter in here, Wendy. You know why?
Sure did.
Because Jim O'Hare entered the studio.
Wow, I'm blushing. No, actually, that's a rash. I'm sorry. No, actually, it's jelly. It's actually from
is
a
that
donut.
Jelly?
That's my bad. So I'm not blushing. I don't have a rash. I just have to wipe my mouth. I'm sorry.
Yes, you know him best from Parks and Rec, where he played Gary, Jerry, Larry.
Terry.
And Terry.
And Barry. And there's five.
Yeah. Did I miss one? There's
yeah. Well, Chris Pratt's character did a karate show, Johnny Karate,
right.
And they brought me on as his mailman, and right. He would have the little ninjas kick my ass, and I was called Barry.
Please explain to people, because I loved this inside joke. Your coworkers just didn't know your name.
My character on the show was the punching bag. But the reason it happened, the reason this whole bit of all these names, here's how silly things can get. The producers, Mike Schur, who's brilliant and created the show with Greg Daniels, thought, wouldn't it be great if we became like a Jeopardy question?
Mm-hmm.
So they kept changing my name. Their hope is that one day Alex Trebek will say, what comedy series had a regular character's name changed 5 times over 7 years? And it would be
Gary, Jerry, Larry, Terry, Barry,
Gergich, Gengerch, whatever the hell they call me. So, yeah, but the funny part for the cast was we would lose track of who I was.
Yeah.
So we would do a take, and Amy would be like, you know, Jerry, who is he? Who is he today? Like, it got very confusing, but it was worth it for the laugh.
So funny.
I was late to the Parks and Rec party. I thank my 14-year-old son, Dylan, who started streaming it on Netflix.
That's where it's.
And I love it.
The crazy part is we were on the air for, we did 7 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, named at one point, Time Magazine called us best show. We won a Peabody Award, all this great stuff. But it was not a huge rating success.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think it would be over by now. Because of Netflix and Hulu, and we're on two stations during the day, we are more popular than we ever were when we were on the air.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Isn't that nice?
But it's awesome because so many people are like, are you sick of people coming up to you and everything? My God, they're always so nice. There's nothing to be sick of.
I know I mentioned this last time you were on, but it bears repeating. The first season that it was on, the first season that Parks and Recreation was on, I didn't think it was good.
No.
I just didn't.
Wow.
I was so disappointed because I loved everybody involved. And then I've never seen a show turn it around like you guys turned it around in the 2nd through 7th seasons. It was funny.
I actually say to people who are starting it, start with season 2.
Yeah.
Season 1 was only 6 episodes. What happened was Amy had just come off of SNL. She had just had the baby. So NBC said, don't do a pilot. Just start shooting.
Yeah.
You do a pilot to figure out what works and what doesn't work.
Right.
So we didn't have that. So Amy's character of Leslie Knope was coming across kind of like Michael Scott from The Office.
Yeah,
that
a little
was
bit.
Never the intention, but this is what was happening.
Yeah.
So they regrouped from season 1 to 2. And it became a different show.
Boy,
but I always say to people, definitely go back to season 1 because there is some great funny stuff in there.
Yeah.
But the characters hadn't found out who they were yet.
Right.
You know, people don't get it. You start a show with strangers, but we're supposed to look like we've all been together for years.
Yeah. That is weird.
It is kind of weird. But with a pilot, you can figure some stuff out, and we never did it. We shot 6. We went right at it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Anything else you want to bring down? Anything other terrible things you want to say about the show?
Yeah, well, about you in particular.
Jim, there's plenty.
I just got your test results, and there's some bad
they
news.
Did.
I have to, yeah.
Wow. No good. No. Because I just heard my sugar level was 840 out of 1,000. So that
I guess that's good.
That's
news.
Good, right?
That is.
That's
very
like
good
a
news.
High B.
Right.
I think that's
great.
A high B.
No,
so
you're doing
great. I think you're reading the test wrong, my friend. Yes.
Here's what Wendy and I just found out this about you.
And we still don't believe it.
We don't believe it.
Oh, no.
You didn't just win a daytime Emmy Award.
You are telling me that you didn't already know that.
No.
You don't. Do you follow the national news? Do you watch? Do you watch Colbert? Do you are these shows you watch?
Yes.
Yeah, well, then you wouldn't have heard about it. But
yes, our producer Kevin said that, and we looked at him, and Bill's like, this is obviously a joke.
Bill's like, I've seen his work. This is a ridiculous lie.
Well, but it's for work on a soap opera.
Yeah.
On Search for Tomorrow?
Bold and Beautiful.
Bold and the Beautiful. Yeah, I've never seen here's what happened. The whole thing is so surreal because I get a call one day.
Yeah.
Would you and Wendy, Monica Haran, who was on Everybody Loves Raymond, she played Amy, Brad Garrett's wife.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
Her husband created Everybody Loves Raymond. They have a couple of dollars.
Phil Rosenthal.
And Phil Rosenthal.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So would you guys come on and kind of do like a celebrity cameo kind of fun bit? Sure.
Yeah.
I'm all up for that. It was a decent paycheck. It was all good.
Mm-hmm.
So we do it. Laugh our asses off. We just have a great day. And the world goes on. We go do our thing. It went over well. We get a call. Would you guys do it again? Yeah, same type of situation. One day, in and out.
So you're one of the major characters, mom and dad, on the show?
No.
You're not?
No,
who
I'm
are
too
you?
Young for that.
Oh.
Again, yes. He slams you.
Yeah, you
why
know
do
what?
You come here?
I am so close to tears, and I tried not to cry before noon. And then I sobbed for like 2.5 hours straight. From noon to 2:30, you can't
crying.
Get a hold of me. It's just sobbing.
Who do you play?
We're obnoxious travelers. We are on an airplane.
Oh.
I have a bad knee, so I need an aisle. My wife gets nauseous. She needs the window. So one of their lead characters is stuck in between
us. Oh.
And of course, we're wonderful people, but we're the worst. I give her my sweaty head thing and put it because her neck is...
The pillow?
Yeah, the pillow. I put it behind her neck and she goes, you know, and so it's so much fun, but crazy.
Yeah.
I'm heading to... Actually, I was coming to Chicago to promote something, and in the car, the phone rings, and... Hello. Jim, this is Brad Bell of the Bolton Beautiful. We want to congratulate you on your Daytime Emmy nomination.
Wow.
Huh? Well, then I think it's one of my idiot friends, because
sure.
I would do that to them.
Sure.
So while he's talking to me and telling me what's going to happen, I'm Googling. And then I literally, I won't say the word, I was like, to him, without him, I go, oh, S.
Yeah.
Like, what? And it was true. So then I thought, well, that's just a crazy thing that happened.
Yeah.
So now the awards come, and we're all in the same category. It was me, Monica, Nicole Nichelle O'Hara from
Star Trek.
Star Trek. These two other guys. And now I'm at the awards, and I have plans to go out like the second the show is over. I'm having the driver take me to an event.
Right.
Like, I know this is nothing to think about. So I'm sitting there. And then Larry King was giving the award. And they start showing the clips of the different people. I'm like, oh, boy, he was good. Oh, look at him cry. Oh, he's yelling. He's angry. Oh, then they showed this Nicole Nichelle, and she's dying, and son is saying goodbye to her. I'm like, well, there's our winner.
Yeah.
There's our winner. Whatever, blah, blah. Larry King goes, the winner is Jim O'Hare from blah, blah. And my first thought was, that is so familiar. That, and I swear to God, it's so familiar.
I know that name.
And then I look to the left, and the Bold and Beautiful people start standing up, applauding, and looking at me. So, I mean, it's on video where I'm like, I don't know what's happening. And then I realize, oh, hell, they're giving this to me. So I have to get up and walk up there. And I'm yelling, you idiot. I planned nothing.
See, and Bill has said that. How can people plan nothing? Because you're in the running.
I planned and they're running against soap people who do these dramatic.
Sure, of course.
I did it. And I think I won because when people voted, all the submissions were probably dramatic.
Sure.
And I did I play a funny guy on this thing. And I think that's probably why. So my two thoughts as I'm walking up there is, oh, you're an idiot, you're an idiot, you're an idiot. And don't fall. The fat guy falling will not be, it'll be a meme in 10 minutes. It'll be all over. Get up. So then I kind of just said to myself, just speak from the heart, I guess, because I did not know what to do.
Yeah.
And so I get up there. And one thing I did do, because I set the trophy down and I just said, this is for all the soap people. And I did a bow.
Yeah.
Because I have never been on a soap set before.
It's a lot of work, isn't it?
They work hard, you
really?
Guys.
Really?
Oh, they work so hard. What I do in my normal life in 1 week, they do in a day.
Yeah.
I do 40 pages. They will do six. Actually, they do more than that. They do 60 pages a day. A day.
Right.
That is a pace that I can't
sometimes
even.
Sometimes no rehearsal. Sometimes they get the script and they have to go shoot it and there's no
exactly.
rehearsal.
Well, even the girl I was working with, the first day I did it, said, listen, if you're not liking something, you better swear or just say cut or something because they move on.
Yeah.
If the words come out, they move on.
Yeah. How do you remember all
that? I don't know. This is what I'm saying. So I am so, and so people, and they get it. There's a bit of a stigma.
They're second-class citizens.
I know, but I'm telling you, it's not fair because they are working super hard. I mean, imagine being handed 30 pages and you now have to go out there and do it. That, and there's
not
no
easy.
Cue cards. There's no monitors.
How do you? I mean,
I
seriously,
don't know.
I can't remember one page.
I don't remember either one of your names. and I, you know, no, it's Dave
but
and
Jim
Betsy.
O'Hare sounds familiar.
Yeah. Jim O'Hare does sound, yes. Yeah. I'm so bad, I can barely remember my own name when Larry King said
did you
it.
At any point, Jim, say to yourself, it took Susan Lucci 18 years to win this,
yes.
and here I am, I show up, and they hand me one.
As I'm walking off, funny you would mention this. Boy, Bill did a segment, a nice segment, without even knowing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy,
that's
that must happen every
life.
Once in a while. Yeah. So, Larry, I get up there. I do my little speech, whatever I do. I turn to walk, and there's Susan Lucci standing there because she's coming out to present the next thing. You know, so she gave me, she goes, congratulations. I go, I did it in one punch.
Oh.
No, I'm joking. I didn't say that to her. She's lovely. But, yeah, I didn't have to take 14 times.
Right.
No, but it was crazy. And believe me, I'm so honored. And it, the crazy part is now when you go somewhere, you're now introduced as Emmy Award.
Yes.
It's all crazy.
You want it?
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
What's wrong with that? Jim O'Hare is here. We'll talk about his new movie next. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Ooh, get down with that funky bass line.
Yes, we play music representative of our guests, and you can tell by the music that Jim O'Hare is here.
And I'm breaking it down.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man.
Oh, are you ever?
Ooh.
You're like a young Danny Terrio.
Yeah, what a shame, yes. No, I think I'm exactly Danny Terrio.
Talk about the new movie. It's Middleman. What do we need to know about Middleman?
It's called Middleman. It's an incredibly dark comedy that's going to – it opens Friday, June 9th. Here it's going to be at River East for a week. We're going to be at eight different cities. We never thought we were going to get a theatrical run. That's like kind of a dream for an indie film.
Why did you think that?
Indie films, it's tough. They normally get VOD and then Netflix, which we're going to also do, but the theatrical release is kind of crazy. But when it hit the world, by world I mean festivals, we started winning everything. And so then there was talk. One of my favorite things is I was actually shooting in Chicago, so I was bouncing back and forth to Seattle, our first festival.
Yeah.
We never discussed winning. There was never, we just wanted to be like someone invited us. Oh,
right.
My God, we're going to this, and let's have a beer afterward and go, wow, good for us. And so I went there. I had to, I did the press to the beginning of the screening, had to leave, fly back to Chicago, shot at Wrigley for the day.
Yeah.
This was like last September, whatever.
Yeah.
And Sunday, fly back to Seattle. So I get off the plane and I get a text from the director and he goes, we won. And I go,
look
won
at
what?
You just winning everything.
No, but I go, won what? And he goes, I don't know, but people seem excited.
Oh.
So like, we did not know what, because that was never in our brains. There was truly like me not winning, like never thinking I was going to win that Emmy. There was no prep for it.
I wouldn't be shocked if you won the Cy Young Award this year.
There's talk.
Yeah.
Well, you know what happened the other day? I did the first pitch of the Cubs game and I get the call. They want me to be the starting pitcher
that day's
now.
Starter.
It turns out they like the ball to hit 2 feet from the plate. And they seem really into that. So
you're in.
I'm in. So I'm winning at everything. No, but it's a really dark film directed by my friend for 30-something years, Ned Crowley. He wrote it and directed it. Andy West from The Walking Dead, who played Gareth. And for Walking Dead fans, Josh McDermott is in it, who plays Eugene.
Does he have the mullet in it?
We gave him a ponytail because he's a crazy stand-up comic. And then Ann Dudek, who people will know from a million shows, House and a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
And it's basically about this sweet, simple man. It begins Jerry-esque from Parks.
Yeah.
And then takes a very dark turn. It's ultimately what is the price you'll pay for fame.
Yeah.
He was raised with his mother who taught him comedy through Burns and Allen and Abbott and Costello.
Yeah.
That to them was funny, which in the day was. It's tough to pull that off today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Bill knows nothing about funny, but for those who do, it's an art form.
Right.
And no, but you know, so what I'm saying is, but the mother dies and he goes out into the world. He thinks he can do this. He's going to go to Vegas and become a stand-up with this material.
Oh.
He's doing other people's old material. So he's a simple man. And on the way there, he picks up a hitchhiker and the bodies start piling up.
Oh, wow.
And the funnier he gets.
Excellent.
As the bodies are piling up, the funnier he gets. So what is the price of fame? Will I continue? Will I not? He gets a girl for the first time. He's never even had, 50 years old, never had a girl. Bill, who am I talking
to? I know what you're
preaching to the choir over here.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's really dark.
You almost side with him in a way.
Well,
like,
here's the thing. When it's a journey as an actor, it was an amazing journey because I guess this isn't revealing too much. It's the breaking down mentally of a man.
Right.
Through this. So it's an hour and 40 minutes of a regular guy.
Yeah.
Oh, something's going on. Something to a breakdown.
What happens in the end, Jim? How does it end?
Well, it turns out that it was all a dream. And
what?
And she wakes up and there's Patrick Duffy in the shower with her. And she's like, I just had the craziest dream.
That sounds like an amazing story, though.
It really is cool. And Ned Crowley is a brilliant writer. And I know he's like, excuse me, one of my best friends. So it's easy to say, but He's amazing.
Did he write this with you in mind?
He wrote it with me in mind over 10 years ago, but nice. No one cared. We had no power, and then Parks happened.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I became a huge A-list celebrity. Right. Hello, everybody. Yes. I'm waving to Michigan Avenue. I became a huge A-list celebrity. No, but enough heat that someone said, we'll make this film if you can get him to do it. And I was like, yeah, I want to do it. Parks had just ended. It was a tough shoot. We shot in the desert. It was hot. I'm a fat man. There was a lot of heat, a lot of sweat. I sweated in places. I thought I'd sweat everywhere. There were things coming out of places I didn't know sweated. And it was not pleasant. But the actors, it was a SAG ultra low budget, which means there was no money. And these actors that came on board, these amazing actors, because the script, they said, oh, we want to do this. Because, you know, good actors want to do good work. There's ways to make your money. There's TV shows and there's stuff. There's ways to make your money.
Yeah.
So we were blessed to have these. And Andrew J. West, he's in town now. He's from Gary, and I get a lot of credit for this film because my fat head is on every scene. You know what I mean? And believe me, this head on a big screen, is way too much.
Yeah.
It's big. But what Andy West is doing in this film. If it was a mainstream film, he would be up for an award.
Oh, really?
I know he would.
That
be.
Good.
He would.
The movie's called Middleman, and like we said, it opens this Friday,
June 9th. Yeah,
at only one theater right now
in Chicago. It's going to be in 8 theaters across the different. We're in New York, Boston,
LA, Boston, Atlanta, Seattle, Chicago.
It's right down the street.
Yes,
why do people go to Los Angeles,
and it won the Seattle International Film Festival and the Edmonton International Film Festival.
And at Edmonton, we won Best Comedy and Drama, which
that's
makes
awesome.
No sense.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
you're a
something.
Winner. You have proved it.
Can
it
somebody say hello to you really quickly? They've been on hold for quite a while. You may owe them money, Jim.
There's every chance of that.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, how are you? How are you doing, Jim? Long time no hear. I had to call in because I've heard him on the radio a couple of times, and Jimmy has been probably one of the funniest guys. Oh. We've known each other since we were 7, I think.
Oh, wow.
Danny Swafford, right?
Yes, it is.
Danny, one of my all-time favorite memories in life is going to your grandparents' farm in Iowa. Do you remember that?
I do, vividly, and I had to laugh because when you were on Nick's show with the last director you had, I was going to call him then, and I said, all you got to do is put Jimmy on horseback and write
a movie.
And actually, one of my memories from that trip was the horses ran over a new set of kittens.
Oh, no.
Because they don't know what's happening. I don't know if you remember that, Danny, they don't know. They're running into the corral thing. And yeah, and we were kids because I remember I went with your family.
Yeah, it was a great time. I see everything that you're in, and it couldn't make me happier. Jimmy's whole family was they were the original reality show, and God bless his mother was the funniest, sweetest woman I ever known in my life.
She was. She absolutely. I agree, Danny.
And I guarantee that's where Jimmy got most of his humor from, and that's a testament to not only him but his mom.
And, that's so nice.
I thoroughly enjoy seeing you and hearing you, and I'm thrilled about your success.
Danny, that's awesome. How are you doing? Because I know at one point you had a little heart thing going on.
Everything's been good.
Awesome.
Everything's been good. Thanks for asking.
You know, I ended up having surgery. I had to have penis reduction surgery.
Oh, my God.
So I've been through my trials, too. Anyway, but no, Danny, but that's so awesome. Because Danny and I, every once in a while, he'll do a tweet back and forth. But I haven't seen you in over 40 years, I'm guessing?
It's been a long time.
Been a long time.
I've seen you, but you haven't seen me.
Well, that's, you know.
Do you still have that farm and a horse? Maybe you guys can hook up.
Exactly. Actually, I can't be around farm animals.
No, it's trouble.
It was a bit of an issue with the law.
No, you don't have to go into detail.
Yes.
Dan, thank you for calling it.
Danny, thank you so much, buddy. Give my love to your family.
I certainly will. It's good talking to you, buddy.
You too, Danny.
Isn't that nice? That's so nice.
That's awesome.
Jim O'Hare is his name. His new movie is called Middleman. Go see it. It opens this Friday. It should be good. He's also the winner of a Daytime Emmy. He's got his own airport named after him. Everything's going well.
I do.
Everything's going so well.
I'll be there tonight at my airport.
Oh, good. Thanks. Great to see you again,
Jim. You guys, this is a great show to do. Thank you so much. I love it. Love it, love it.
We'll take a quick break and then some news. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Is it the first Tuesday of the month already?
This today, Wendy, is the first Tuesday of June.
Happy first Tuesday.
Happy first Tuesday to you and yours.
That means that we visit with Mike McNamara, the co-founder and executive director of the Midwest Independent Film Fest.
Happy first Tuesday, everybody.
Hope this is the best first Tuesday of the rest of your life, Mike. That's what I hope.
You know what?
That's
today is going to be. It's beautiful out, but but just cold enough where it's time to get into the theater tonight. Head over to the Midwest Indy over Landmark Century Center Cinema. This will be one of our biggest nights of the year, and I brought in a couple guys to tell you all about it.
Gentlemen, welcome aboard. Reed, we've had you on before.
Yes.
But now you're in a new capacity this time around, correct?
Well, it's not a new, it's an additional capacity. Mm-hmm. So in addition to making our own content, creating our own content, we want to control the distribution of it. So we formed a company called Ammo Content that currently is based in New York, and my partner, Armand Ohner, is on his way to Chicago now to host a panel this evening.
Yep, and that'll open the night. So we're going to have a panel with Armand, Reed's business partner at Ammo Content, and Lisa Holmes from Music Box Films, and this gentleman who I'll introduce in a second, talking all about film distribution. You know, one of the biggest challenges for a filmmaker, one of the many, once it's all done and everyone's high-fiving each other, is you have to actually get this thing out there. You have to sell it. You have to get some money for it. And so that's the hard part, I bet.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, the normal channels for that are you would take your movie, once it's a completed product, you would take it to maybe a film festival or even have like a DVD of it and show it to a distributor. But it doesn't always go well, does it? I mean, you can get rejected 1,000 times before somebody shows interest.
Right. Well, normally you'd have a sales strategy for it where you present it to all the buyers at once.
Yeah.
So you hopefully have more
bidding
than one
war?
The bidding war, which unfortunately I've never experienced.
Oh, all right.
But I'd love to have a bidding war.
Yeah.
Arm wrestling,
You know
sort
what,
of...
though? What if you sat in the back of the theater and just keep going, bidding war, like that, just to kind of spark them a little bit?
I tried that. It didn't work.
All right. I'm going to try that strategy. Yeah. It might not work for him, but I feel like that's...
They threw him out of the theater.
Yeah.
But and that gentleman you hear there is the producer of the film that we are premiering tonight. This is a Chicago premiere. This has received raves all over the country, including from a variety of New York, the Hollywood Reporter. It's called one. I don't mean to put pressure on you, but they did call it that kind of film that only comes around once in a decade. Epic and fantastic. It's called Dave Made a Maze.
And it involves a fort. So, Bill, you will love it.
And
it
makes like
a
fort.
It involves an epic fort.
Yeah. It is. And so the producer, John Charles Meyer, here he is. And I wanted to bring
him
in today.
How's it going?
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
When you get accolades like a film like this only comes around once every 10 years, what does that do to you?
You sit in the back of a room and you say, bidding war, bidding war, right. Bidding war, bidding war. No, I mean, it's been an amazing ride so far. We're having a really good time with it. And the director and I have been traveling a lot. He's actually on his way back from Brazil right now. We just had our South American premiere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been great. It's been a lot of fun.
Talk about the epic fort. I saw the trailer. That's all I've seen. And it looks totally interesting.
So, well, good. Thank you. Dave Made a Maze is an adventure comedy about a frustrated artist who gets lost inside the cardboard fort he builds in his living room.
Mm-hmm. Right up your alley.
A story we've heard 1,000 times.
Every movie.
The Bill Leff story.
Yeah. Such an old trope. His girlfriend comes home from a weekend away. He's inside a tiny little kid's cardboard refrigerator box fort, essentially, in their living room. And claims that he's stuck inside and can't find his way out. And, of course, she tries to talk him out of being an idiot and eventually convinces her that he really can't find his way out. So she gets some of his friends and they start a search party. And it is
the rescue.
It's much bigger on the inside.
That's fantastic.
It is really cool.
You're going to love this film. We're just so thrilled to have the Chicago premiere. It made its world premiere at Slam Dance earlier this year, which is one of the top festivals in the country. And John and most of his team are out of Cleveland, actually. So it's a Midwest crew that put this film together, and it's what we're all about. So,
John, talk about the difference between – because at some point somebody wrote this down. Somebody said,
sure.
All right, I'm just going to write down my idea and see what happens. So what's the difference between that initial reading when you first saw the script of the treatment and the finished product? How is it different? How is it the same?
This particular film amazingly retains a ton of the elements that were in the very first 60-page draft, which the initial writer, Stephen Sears, coughed up in 3 days.
Yeah.
The guy who eventually ended up directing it, Bill Watterson, told Steve that they were friends from improv, actually, from Second City.
Yeah.
Told him a story about being a kid and building an epic fort in his bedroom and following protocol with his mother, leaving a note to say, I'm going to go over to a friend's house for dinner. Mom came home, didn't see the note on the kitchen table, freaked out when she couldn't find her son, and tore the epic fort apart.
Oh.
And he was crushed, and he was never able to recreate the epic fort.
No.
So he told that story to Steve, and 3 days later, Steve had a 60-page draft, and it retained a lot of the same elements, a lot of the same characters, a lot of the same beats and rooms. that the final film had.
Despite the trials and tribulations of the fort, we all can relate to that because we all made a fort, whether it was hanging Afghans over chairs or the box.
We interviewed our cast during production about, you know, some of the sort of standard questions for behind the scenes. What did you think of your character and what was your favorite moment on set? But one of the questions we got the best response out of was, what were your forts like as a kid? And everybody had a story.
So yeah. Totally relatable.
That was fun for behind the scenes.
I loved the forts. I love that. That was like the high. And we would set up, you know, maybe get some of the couch cushions and kind of. I mean, that was like that was a pretty great day.
That's when life was easy. Remember?
Life was so easy.
Much better.
But aside from just the novelty of that, when you have an idea that's that, it's an original idea, but it's so relatable to everybody, that's when you hit gold, isn't it?
I think way more so than I realized we were going to as we were making it. The thing that's been really gorgeous at festivals for us has been the ridiculous cross-section of people that have really responded to it in Q&As and some of the after events, whatever. I mean, I've been approached by 80-year-olds and 15-year-olds across every racial. I mean, it's sliced across all demographics. It's been a lot of fun in that regard, and I really don't think I realized to what degree we had that when we were making it. I knew I loved the story. I knew I responded to it, but I don't think I realized how well it was going to do that
way. If money was no object, what would you have done differently or bigger?
A better maze?
No, I mean, I think we just would have given our art department a hell of a lot more time and resources. The single biggest challenge to this film, every film has challenges with money, but the single biggest challenge with this one specifically was keeping the art department ahead of the camera team. Mm-hmm. We only had enough space for shooting to have two sets up at a time, and we built 26 sets in 20 days.
Holy moly.
So most of the sets were up for less than 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'd be shooting on one side of the room, we'd be building on the other side of the room, and, you know, you can't make noise when you're shooting. So the instant the AD would say cut, all manner of saws and hammers and glue guns and, you know, there'd be 30 people working on making the next set right next door. So, yeah, just giving the art department more time and resources is what I would have done differently.
Yeah.
Otherwise, not much.
Tonight's the night.
Tonight's the big night.
Tonight is the night. Right at 6 o'clock, Landmark Century Center Cinema will open the night with that film distribution panel that's going to have Reed's business partner, Armand, there. Armand owner, also Lisa Holmes from Music Box. And John's actually going to jump on that panel as well. All about selling your film, showing your film. Then, right after that, we are going to have the Chicago premiere of Dave Made a Maze. Excited.
Very exciting.
So, it's going to be fun. So,
stick around. We have more to discuss with you. And if you'd like to jump in, you can easily at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right. We have Mike McNamara here, co-founder and executive director of the Midwest Independent Film Fest. And every time you're up here, Mike, everybody gives you accolades because without you, some of these films would never get seen.
Well, that's really why we started this film festival and why we made it a year-round festival, because there's so much talent that's here in the Midwest, that hails from the Midwest, mm-hmm. and just people just don't know about it. And especially these days, there's so much noise out there, there's so much content, YouTube and Netflix and all this stuff, that you really need to shine a big fat light on the talent that we have here in the Midwest. And so that's what we're doing, and we're in our 13th year. We pack the house every first Tuesday, and we're excited for everyone to come out tonight.
That's great. I love the way it's grown over the 13 years. It's really nice.
When we started, people thought we were crazy.
Right.
And, you know, not to age ourselves too much, but there was no online ticketing.
Right.
You know, so we would just call. My mom had a list of people. She would call. You know, we would all just kind of text people and just kind of hope people showed up.
And how many showed up like the first year or so? I mean, was it pretty minimal?
70, 90, 100, which we were like, okay.
That was good.
But people thought we were crazy to start a festival where you're only showing films made in the Chicago in the Midwest. Because in 2004, there really weren't too many. Yeah. And now here we are.
Explosion.
We're thrilled, and there's so much great films and great TV shows and production all over the Midwest, and we're here to celebrate it and to keep this community together, keep that work happening here.
Reed, here's a question about distribution, and I know the company's new, your distribution company is new, but how does the cash flow work with this? Because you need a lot of cash running through the veins of a company like this to keep it surviving, so where does that money come from?
Well, the company was founded with four or five like-minded investors, so it does have cash to operate. It's not good to start a company without cash.
Right.
So you need cash to start the company. So Armand came from another company and was very familiar with this type of business. And so
there's no money laundering, is there? A little bit, just a little bit.
All right. We're on the air, Bill.
We're open to the idea. I think is what he's saying.
Not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just curious.
No, there's none of that.
All right.
But every 6 weeks, somewhere in the world, there's a film and TV market, and Armand sort of spends most of his time traveling and acquiring content.
Oh, nice.
And right now, we're about 3 or 4 months old. I think we have 120 titles launched.
Holy cow.
And it's a very interesting model. And
what did you say about over 500,000, over 500,000 views, I think Armand had said? I mean, they're really taking off since January.
Yeah. I mean, he's very, very experienced person in this end of the business.
So how do you decide once you've seen a property and you think this is a good fit? Is there a formula in your head where you say, are we in this to make money or are we in this to be artistic or is it somewhere in the middle?
Well, it's somewhere in the middle. It's like we want to provide audience for these movies. In some cases, they've only been released overseas. So he sort of has a feel for what works and what doesn't work. And in addition to that, we also produce films. So I would like to use it as a way to as a way to approach development.
Yeah.
So as you start to get traction on these platforms, you have a relationship with the filmmaker, and that sort of bodes well for the sequel or that sort of thing. Sure. So it's all very new, and we're excited about it. And Armand is much more knowledgeable than I am.
That's Reed Brody talking, and also John Charles Meyer, the producer of Dave Made a Maze, which is premiering tonight at Midwest Independent Film Fest. Are you guys working together on something? Did I overhear that?
Well, what we found out as we were walking in here, we both use Nick Thune, starring. I made a movie called Bad Johnson that Nick Thune starred in.
And Nick plays Dave in Dave Made a Maze. He's the title character of both our movies. But we met about 5 minutes ago. So. Oh,
but he literally said it as we were walking in the studio. And also, same company, Gravitas.
Is distributing both films.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Good, good, good. Now, Nick is...
Look at that community. It's all coming together.
And now, John, I don't know if you knew this, but Reed is going to produce your next film.
Oh,
I didn't
awesome.
Tell you.
No,
I just wanted to make this marriage happen right on the air.
There you go. My next film.
Yeah, okay. Perfect. Perfect.
Wow, did that work out nicely. Nick Thune's background is primarily stand-up comedy. Had he acted much before these two films?
Yeah.
He had.
He's got a decent number of credits to his name. He's got a lot of stand-up comedy and a lot of late night appearances and that whatnot too, but he was in he had one big title to his name, Knocked Up, I think. He had a smaller role and a lot of other indie films and whatnot.
He has a strong Chicago following. He plays here once a year and sells out about 8 or 9 shows, so he's great and
good.
He's going to be very
good. I'm glad to see him doing so well.
Yeah.
Tell us one more thing that we don't know about this movie, Dave Made a Maze, because honestly, as soon as I hear a movie like this only comes around once every 10 years, I need to see it. So what else should we know about this?
I mean, the single thing I think that sets us apart the most is art direction and production design. 80% of the movie takes place in invented environments.
Yeah.
We built 26 rooms out of various iterations of cardboard. And it's just visually unlike anything you've ever seen. The backdrops are very different.
That's great.
They're going to start a network show on the DIY network, like how to make forts or something, and you're going to be behind it.
I went to a music festival in Boise, Idaho, which ended up being a way bigger blast than I ever would have dreamed. it's called Tree Fort. But they have music fort, film fort, yoga fort, all these different forts. And they had Fort. I flipped out. They got a bunch of cardboard and a bunch of kids, and they just let them go nuts with tape and scissors. And I was like, "You guys, my movie!" Completely lost my mind.
That's Fort. Yeah. Is there some way we can give away some tickets to tonight's
Let's do
presentation?
It. If anyone that's listening right now, for about the next hour, we'll have a free ticket giveaway. Just go to our Facebook page for the Midwest Independent Film Festival, just facebook.com/MidwestFilm. And the first 10 people to message us on our Facebook page, mention Bill and Wendy, and we'll have comps for you and a guest to come out tonight for First Tuesday, so the Midwest Independent Film Festival. For the rest of you, go buy tickets at MidwestFilm.com. All right?
That's fair.
And we'll see you tonight at Landmark Century Center Cinema, 6 o'clock.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Thank you, John. Great to meet you. Reed, nice to see you again.
Thank you so
and Mike,
much.
As always, we appreciate it.
Maybe you can be in the sequel.
I would love to be in Fort 2. Can I be in Fort 2?
Dave made another maze.
It's called Fort.
It's called Bill Tried to Make a Maze.
I'd love that. I want in. We'll take a quick break, then some news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I have the names, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Let's see.
This is legit.
This is going to be really
no,
bad.
No, this
I'm
is
warning.
Legit. Ella and Alexander are the names of George Clooney and his wife, Amal Clooney's babies, the twins.
So Elle and Al?
Yeah, Elle and Al.
Did the boy already have a cool 5 o'clock shadow when yes. he came out and was wearing a suit?
LL is the name of the airline, the Hebrew airline. So maybe they named him after LL Airline.
What is the coffee maker that he's doing commercials for? Have you seen those?
Oh, yeah. Those are hysterical commercials.
I have not seen these.
They fuse in footage of him. Like in part of it, he's taking a ride with Burt Reynolds from when he's smoking the Bandit. I'm trying to think
but you guys aren't remembering the name of the coffee, no. So it's not working.
No, but it's a good one. It's the good one.
It's called
Nescafe.
It's not Nescafe.
Nestea?
It's not Nestea. Those would have been good names for the
Nesman?
Twins. Nescafe and Nestea would have been great names for the kids.
Look, we've got this coffee maker, and we think the best person to sell it would be George Clooney. I'd love to have been a part of those conversations.
Those kids are already better looking than I've ever been in my whole life. They were just born 10 minutes ago. They're already handsomer than I've ever been.
And they probably the pictures will probably get a heck of a lot more than my pictures I try to sell of you.
Nespresso.
Nespresso. That's what it is. They opened up these shops, like in shopping centers, Nespresso shops, so I know you can get them there. And I think they're for home use, too, right? Can't you get that in a store?
I've never seen it.
Nespresso?
Somebody claims it's a hilarious new commercial for Nespresso.
They're really... you would like the commercials, because he...
He time travels through the most iconic movie scenes.
Yeah. They're really well done. And just to get him, he doesn't need to do commercials. He's George Clooney.
Yeah.
Just to get him is quite a coup, wouldn't you say? It's George Clooney.
He must really like that coffee.
That's a big payday, too, right? It's got to be a huge payday.
I wonder if he passed up, like, you know, McDonald's and Taco Bell to do
right.
that at.
Right. Although I think he used to do, when he was a struggling actor years and years ago, I think he did commercials back then.
Are his new kids struggling actors at this point, or they already have
right.
the first contract?
They're already doing commercial work, yeah.
So, Leslie, we figured it out. Have you seen the Nespresso commercial?
Oh, yes. I think they're cool.
They're very funny, aren't they?
Yeah, I love them. You know, with the Muppets and Smokey.
Right. He just blends right into the other scenes. Now, remind me, because a year or so ago, he did commercials with Danny DeVito. Were those also for Nespresso, or were those for something else?
Yes, it was the same thing.
Same thing.
All right, we'll see. And
stay
true.
They did a playoff of the twins. That
oh, they did?
That
the Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah,
Yeah. All right.
And also it says that George Clooney, is this in the commercial? He takes a call from his pal Andy Garcia.
Yeah.
Is that in the commercial?
Yeah, because they were in the Ocean's 11 movies together.
So Andy obviously gets a little payday there, too,
sure.
But not as much.
But he doesn't do a lot of commercial. You never see Andy Garcia doing.
I got to try Nespresso. It must be the best stuff out there.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Leslie.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Why do so many of those types of drinks, like Nescafe or Nestea or Nespresso, why do they all have the NES?
Nestle, maybe?
Oh, is that it? I bet that's it. You're like Columba.
No.
That should
have
taken
have
you an hour.
Brain.
You did it in less than a second.
I could be wrong, but I would guess
I hope
Nestle.
You're wrong. I'm hoping you're wrong.
I got to find out now, because that was pretty genius of me.
I bet it is Nestle. I bet they're the parent company.
George Clooney has been working with Nespresso for more than 10 years.
Wow. You just noticed today.
I did. I never saw it. Oh. You told me about it.
It's always, I've seen it like 100 times. It's always on.
They have a new machine called the Virtuo Plus.
Yeah.
And the dad-to-be delivers his only line in the whole spot. Nespresso, what else?
And you are correct, Wendy. Nestle Company.
Yeah. I am a genius.
Wow.
Nestle Nespresso SA 2017.
I love when sometimes I look really smart.
So that same company,
totally.
Nestle, makes all, they make
yeah,
Nespresso,
well,
Nescafe, Nestea.
And Nestle Quick.
Nestle's Quick. Anything chocolatey Nestle, it's all theirs.
N-E-S-T-L-E-S.
Nestle
says
makes
the very best
chocolate.
Chocolate.
I don't remember going quite that way. It's possible. It's very possible.
You will never forget that. You know, one day when you're in a retirement castle and you're in your hundreds,
when
you
he's
going to
ride a tricycle
that.
Out in front of yeah. my retirement castle.
I like that he said
that.
Retirement castle.
Yeah, not a retirement home.
I've always wanted to be like
a big
Rapunzel.
Time radio professional.
Right.
Hey, Faye, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Are you the Faye and Nescafe?
It's funny.
Thank you. I'm done for the day.
So you know about...
I have the machine. My daughter gave it to us about 2 years ago for Christmas and absolutely loved it. If you want a really good cup of espresso, anything like that, it's great. Except we ran out of the capsules.
Uh-oh.
And then I tried to order it. I mean, I went to different stores. There is no store that has it. You have to order it. And by ordering it, it costs, on average, about $1.50 a capsule.
Oh, no. Faye, you got to call Clooney direct.
Wait, though. Think about getting a cup of espresso. You're going to spend more than $1.50.
Triple that.
Oh, well, my husband can drink three. I mean, on average, he can drink about four or five espresso, double espresso
wow.
a night.
That's impressive.
I want to get yeah. one now.
Does he sleep ever?
He can sleep. He's
wow.
He's European. He
oh.
sleeps.
That explains
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he just drinks coffee and smokes. That's it.
That's so. Excellent. Good for him. Wow.
Yeah,
so would you say that, like, if you compare this to other machines on the market, is this a little more exclusive, a little more high-end, or where does this fit in?
It's a little bit high-end, yeah.
It
yeah.
looks
it's a little bit more high-end. It's not as high-end, but it's still, I think it's over $200, $300.
It says fast piping hot results with the new Nespresso Virtuo line. Brews classic American
yes,
coffee and Italian espresso, either or. Mm. Large 40-ounce water tank and used capsule container.
And the latte steamer is awesome.
Is it?
I mean, it just frosts it automatically.
All right.
I'm getting one.
When
I'm
going to
send
one?
You a commission, Faye, and George Clooney.
Yeah.
Okay.
He needs the
okay,
money now.
You can get me, you know, you can send, you know, a bunch of capsules.
That's all you want. You want to be paid in capsules.
Yeah, that's fine.
I asked my daughter if she could get it for us for Christmas, the capsules. She's like, no, you're on your own.
Oh, no. Oh, no. We'll make this work, Faye. We promise. Before the day is out, we'll
okay.
figure this out for you.
Great.
All right, take care.
Thank
Bye.
You, Faye. How are you going to figure it out, and what are you going to do?
Our next caller, Judy, has the answer.
Oh, I hope Faye is listening.
I read ahead.
Hi, Judy.
Hi, it's Joni, actually.
Oh, hi, Joni. Kevin, you're fired.
The thing is, I have gone through several of the espresso machines, or I have had several of them, and the previous caller is a little bit in error that they are not $1.50 each. You can get them from probably 69 or 68 cents up to over $1.
Mm-hmm.
On the average, I'd say they're maybe 70 cents. A lot of shopping malls have them now with their own boutique store. You can also order it online. There's a minimum, and then you get free shipping, or periodically they say, you know, it doesn't matter how many you can get free shipping.
Yeah.
So it's really easy, and it is the reason it's so good. It is, I think it's 19 bars of pressure. It's the only machine available that has that kind of pressure outside of Europe.
So that's what FYI. Makes it so tasty is the amount of pressure being used to brew it.
Right.
All right.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's, and I'll tell you, I could sell them forever because
yeah.
they are, it's just such a good product.
Yeah.
There's a milk frother. Really, you can froth your own milk?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can buy the milk frother separately, depending on what kind of machine you have. That's how I started. And the machines that I've had, we have at different places, I have it where the frother can be built in to it, but you can take the milk out of it. The container is by itself attached to the machine. And if you've got overnight guests, you can put the container in the milk overnight, and the frother is to die for.
Yeah, it's that good.
My original was long gone, but I kept that frother because it is phenomenal.
Oh.
The Virtuo Plus does not have the frother, but the Virtuo Plus bundle includes the milk.
That is a coffee maker. I believe that Vertero. I think it's Vertero.
Oh, okay. You're probably right.
They're selling coffee in that. I mean, they've got to keep coming up with new gimmicks, whatnot,
yeah.
because some people don't like espresso. But if you want espresso... there's one that is when it gets on sale, it's under 400, and it is to die for. I mean, once you've had it, there's no going back. And I was in the espresso store in Paris, so my son and I first saw it.
Yeah.
And we thought, oh no, it can't be like a real espresso. And then we went to visit friends in Bordeaux, and they had bought it. So I thought, well, if it's okay with them, it's okay for us.
Must be good enough.
It's fabulous. I highly
and they go for about $400.
Well, there's some you can get for $249, and the highest.
You can get the highest could be
$599. The Latissimo Pro.
Oh, can I rent to own
want
to?
Latissimo, and that's what I have, and I got it on sale. So periodically, it's on sale.
Oh,
and sometimes they'll do promotions where if you buy it, you send in your receipt, and then you get so many capsules. Oh. I mean, they're pretty good at their marketing gimmicks. Every machine comes with, I think, 20 capsules.
That's not bad at all.
It's the best stuff in the world.
Is it better than
espresso?
Is it better than Krups?
They don't make espresso.
I thought they did. Is it better than Singer?
No. Those companies make espresso machines. This is a self-contained capsule that you put into the machine.
Oh, okay.
So it makes it easier and more delicious.
All right.
And it's a no-minder. If you've made your own espresso through the years, cleaning that thing out is a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
And this just makes it so simple. I have one always at home, an extra one, in case mine breaks. I've never had one break on me.
You should be doing the commercials instead of Clooney. You're better at selling these than Clooney is.
I think so.
Judy, thank you so very much. We appreciate that information.
Joni.
Frank has something to say, too.
Hey, Bill, Wendy. That stuff, that Nespresso, espresso maker is so good. I've had to join a 12-step program. Seriously,
it's that good.
I bought those machines for everyone in my family simply so that when I go to their home, I can have one.
Smart play.
All right, thank you so much. And real quickly, for those of us concerned with the environment, because, yes, climate change is a real deal, Carol's on the line with us. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that those pods are recyclable.
Oh, they are. Good.
Because I was talking to a representative from the company, and I said, the only thing I hate about these things is that it's such a waste.
Right.
Landfill, and she said, "Oh, these are recyclable. In fact, you can send them back to the company."
Oh, even better.
Good.
They'll reuse them, clean them out, maybe.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Kevin, you need to send the Nespresso or just Clooney an air check of this, and we all need our own Nespresso, top-of-the-line $600 one.
I like that George Clooney is an Academy Award winner,
and all we're talking about is that
he's hawking coffee machines. All right, we'll take a quick break. Congratulations, George and Amal, on the birth of the twins.
What are their names again?
They're Ella and Alexander.
LL,
after the airline. He's a big fan.
You know that the popularity of those names is going to skyrocket next year,
through the
roof.
Absolutely. People are already changing their kids' names that were born weeks ago.
I'm changing
six
mine.
Years old. Yeah, I'm changing them.
We'll take a quick break, and then there's more ahead. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Some lovely listener texted us at 312-981-7200 and told us you can get the Nespresso machine at Bed Bath & Beyond, and they constantly give you a 20% off coupon.
Yeah, they send you in the mail about once a month or a text. Yeah, so that's a pretty significant savings.
I just don't know which one to get. There are so many models of Nespresso.
What's the highest end model? What would that run you? Could you get a really high end one?
$299.99 at Bed Bath & Beyond. Now,
it's not bad at all.
Joni, who called in, said she spent almost $600.
$599
was hers.
They've got breaking George Clooney news, by the way.
What else happened?
He doesn't like coffee.
Reporting that the couple got a visit from the Obamas last week. Yeah, at their English home.
Oh.
There you go.
How about that?
That.
To induce labor? Were they there to induce labor?
Hi, neighbor, just in the neighborhood. No, I don't know.
To see if the babies were born. Are the babies here yet?
Just checking in.
Yeah. He was very kind.
Don't really have anything else going on right now.
I want a visit by Obama.
You can't count
Thanks, Obama.
You know, if we would have flashed back about 15 years ago when he was looking for any kind of publicity he could get in that Senate run, I bet he would drop by. Yeah.
He might have done it then.
I'd share an espresso with him.
Oh, that would be lovely. Speaking of babies and baby names, this is kind of coincidental, but up on the stream, experts have chosen the top baby names for boys and girls that you don't want to name your child. These are names that at one point were very much in vogue, but for various reasons that we'll get into on the stream in just a little bit, these are names that even though once were a good idea, today not so much.
That makes me a little uncomfortable because what if somebody listening has one of these names? What do they do?
You know, I'm looking at the list. And,
I'm on it, aren't I?
No. The closest we come on girls' names are Whimsy and Winsome.
All right.
I'm not hearing too many Wendy's nowadays, though. That may go. I don't know. Do you think that one will get revived, Wendy?
Is the Wendy name decline on the decline
yes,
or on the incline?
Yes, there was just some list of names that are pretty much dead at this point, and that is one
on
of them.
There?
I think Sorry. William's probably doing pretty well still.
That, right? for some reason, is one that just doesn't get to be, it's not affected by time somehow.
And there are so many derivations of it now. Will,
yeah,
Bill.
Liam.
That blows me away. I just know people that have named their kid Liam, and it's not Will. It's not short for William.
It just sounds very...
I'm going to start calling you that.
Yeah, it sounds European.
Well,
almost,
it's interesting, too, when people name kids after, like, you know, older relatives.
Right.
Like, you don't hear the word Lois or, you know, Ingrid being used much, but sometimes
Agnes.
They'll pop up. Yeah, that's another one. You know?
There's no one named Agnes under, like, 65, right?
I know one.
A young girl named Agnes? Really? Oh, that's
They call her Aggie?
No, they call her Agnes.
That's, yeah, they do? That's lovely. But it is... It
you were going to slam it, weren't you?
No. But it does
It's
sound,
an old, yeah. older name, and they have made a comeback.
Yeah.
They really have. Yeah. Gertrude?
That has not. Did you think that did?
I don't Gertie.
Think it, oh, maybe it did a little bit. Because of E.T. Because that girl on E.T., Drew
that,
Barrymore's
that
name
was... That was her name?
Yeah, her name was Gertie.
Huh.
So that's why it's so darn popular. Half the girls you meet now are named Gertie because of the E.T.
Liam, I think we have to take a break.
We must take a break.
You know,
John
that's
Hansen
you now.
Demands,
I'm calling you that.
I'm all right with that.
Right.
John Hansen, who's filling in for Steve, demands that the train run on time. So stick around. We'll find out what he has next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.